those documents and find out the authors who wrote those documents. And we rank the authors. The way we do that is every document that this component returns using using is scored. And the author would get a cumulative score, adding up individual scores of every document that that author has written. So suppose the search results three documents, let's say. The first document gets a score of 0.5, the next two get a score of 0.3. The first is written by author A, the next two by author B, then author B gets a score of 0.6 and goes down in front of author A. So that's how we rank the authors as well. That's done here. Then we compose the results and throw back to the user interface. That's the technical architecture.
So if I write more papers, I'm more likely to come up higher.
Yes, right now, this is it. So let's collaborate with Patrick.
Well, that's actually one of the challenges, Dr. Orr, is that if we're approximating expertise with documents that you've published or written, there's going to be a certain amount of false positives and false negatives. That's one of the challenges in the system. We really, that was the best way we could come up with it, is aggregating the scores and finding it that way. Some of the other suggestions that we'll get into the lessons learned and future enhancements is that we really also wanted to use other sources, such as course catalogs and other things you can link to faculty that'll be aggregated in the score, and you could search all of them, not just the published papers, and the score will be aggregated that way. So then if you're teaching more classified information retrieval, then you're more likely going to be an expert in information retrieval. So as you increase the document corpus with this, that problem will go away. Also one of the challenges we want is scalability. Obviously, we preface the presentation saying that we're starting out with the course school and the department in the Clark School of Engineering, but the ultimate goal is probably to be scaled the entire university, or even larger. So we wanted to develop a system that could easily mold on top of that framework. Some of the options we had were to use a relational database in lieu of XML. That was pretty much the chief competing option there. But we thought that the maintenance and the database side was going to be more time consuming in the long run than the XML approach. So that's how we chose the XML. The last challenge was actually getting it to work. We say that tongue in cheek because we've all had that challenge, but a lot of the code that was for this, we actually had to develop ourselves, just relying on theoretical frameworks. So that was a huge challenge for us, and we're thankful to have at least a working version to show you. I'm also going to talk about the batch evaluation. So after we built the system and we got it working, we went ahead and did some batch evaluation using only document retrieval. Basically what we did is we computed 26 queries that were used to, we thought would find a document that we knew that was in, well, an author that we knew, offered a document that we knew that we had indexed. And then we added a couple more onto there. So using those 26 queries, you'll see a chart in a second, but the average precision was 64.5% about, and the average recall was 83.5%. Obviously, we're more concerned about precision here than recall, because we don't really want to recall everyone that's relevant to a particular expertise. We want to recall everyone in the search results should at least have a domain in that expertise. So if we evaluate the system on precision, obviously there's a little bit of work that can be done, but recall was definitely calculated as well. The last thing that we found in the user study was the system is only good as our document collection, and when we did the, the batch evaluation, so when we did the batch evaluation, we only had about 100 documents and the 40 authors in there. So Dr. Orr, we're sorry to say that we searched for information for free, we didn't get you.
But did you get anyone else?
Yes, we did. Who did we get? Geeker, Lynn, So here is just a 26 query showing precision and recall as well. From the batch evaluation, we did the user study, and so I'm going to bring up Sonia and Jason to talk.
So I'll just start us off with the initial highlights of the user study. Our methods were essentially polyphasic. We combined single-out observations with follow-up questioning, and we also administered an online survey after doing the observation and questioning of each user. Online survey was put on the heels of that so that they wouldn't forget too much of the details. Our user group were closer last week, and we managed to get informal feedback from a real user, the coordinator of communications and engineering department, which is ultimately the type of person or resource we'll be using to implement this. Like most of you, we explained the system's purpose and the intended users of the document, the intended users of the results and the document purpose. And we started out by feeding them a few keywords, partially to we were anticipating the fact that our document purpose was a little bit slim, but it also helped train them on the content, particularly the engineering part of the content, which the students were mostly familiar with, were mostly unfamiliar with. And in administering our user study, our initial evaluation criteria based on what we anticipated would be the buckets of information we wanted to gather were ease of use, relevance ranking, results display, system performance, and usefulness of results. And you see later as Jason gets into the actual results from the customer study that this didn't change too much, but changed up a little bit, so we still had five books.
Okay, so in the actual study, things changed a little bit because the final availability of our system was pushed back so far that we had very little time to actually conduct our study. I'm sure this is a familiar story for some of you. So we basically did went with what we had, and we took a combination of our observations as well as the study subject single out observations and also the survey results for our final assessment. The buckets of data that Sonia referred to that emerged as we studied our subjects were the documentation that's provided by the system. Documentation can be both what we provide in terms of how to use the system, as well as what feedback the system gives you when you do something. How easy the system is to use, the usefulness of the results display, the performance of the system, was it fast enough, basically, and how useful the results themselves were. And just to give you a quick look, we're not going to cover this in detail, these were all of the questions that we used on our online survey. These are statements to which respondents were asked to indicate the level of their agreement or disagreement on a 5-point Likert scale. So these are the scores averaged over our users. We, as Sonia mentioned, we had 4 users do the study, and we got a 75% response rate on the survey. So this person may not have gotten it on time. We found some interesting things about the system.
Error messages were informative and useful. The scores were relatively low, but it was actually the middle of the Likert scale is not relevant because people actually didn't really get any error that was
Right.
It seems like a negative error, but it really was just the lack of error messages, which is a good thing.
Right. If I were a respondent, I wouldn't necessarily know what to answer for that question, because if I didn't get any messages, is that a good thing or a bad thing? Were the messages informative? Well, I don't know. And you can see that the highest scores were basically ease of use and responsiveness of the system. The system was, we were really happy with the response of the system. It was based on the scene with the web-based interface. So there were a few things that we learned from the study. One regarding the usefulness of the results. The results that we provided gave name and contact information of faculty members. And there was a click-through which ended up going to, in most cases, an overview page on a school's website listing all of the faculty of the school rather than the actual web page of a faculty member. And this came up over and over again as an issue for the users, and it was something, again, it was a matter of time and implementation. There was no real way for the users to validate that the person returned actually has expertise in what they were looking for, because even if they found that that professor's webpage, it wouldn't necessarily have terms related to what they asked for. So there was that disconnect, and that was probably our biggest takeaway from this study, which was our original intention was to provide some snippets in the results that are actually taken from the documents we indexed. And those documents are published articles by the professors, and if we had had time, we would have also done course catalog information. Had we been able to do that, there would have been much more for the users to work with and to see why we returned the results. The results display, some people had some issues with inconsistencies. We had to hand enter some data, so sometimes a professor would show up as being from CLIS lowercase or CLIS uppercase. Some people asked for us to expand those names because a user in the Department of Communications may not know what all of the acronyms stand for. People liked the ranking of the list. Overall, it seems they found it easy to use because it's really modeled after a standard web search, Google or Yahoo, with a standard box and a list of rank results. What little documentation we did provide, which we thought was all that was necessary, generally we got good feedback on that. So get ready for the live demo. You can see the system in action.
All right, so this is the user interface that you've been hearing about, as I was mentioning earlier, and a single line for it. And the way it works is if you put two words in the query, there's two terms like this, it's going to search for either or. A search for this would get database or system, but wouldn't necessarily return a result that had both database. So in this case, it would be a Burke, Frank, and Michael Peck.
Some of you like to have some queries which we can take?
Can you do thing machine? For the people in the center for the making of small devices?
Yeah.
Thing machine. Where did this word come from? People have to create them. Okay, yeah, that's it. Don't tackle
How about latent semantic index?
So your ranking here won't rank somebody who has all three words. Will it rank somebody with all three words higher than somebody with two?
If you put them in quotes, I mean, okay. if you have an order, then it'll return. Like, let's do this one first. So you don't know whether these only have semantic or whether they have all three.
I'll tell you, Jen Goldbeck doesn't have the word "we." I've never used that word in
paper. Yeah, yeah. You put it in quotes.
Let's see what happens. Right. And you know, I think that a lot of this comes down to the time available to really understand the way that Lucene can be configured. It took so long to just get it working at all that probably a lot of these things could be customized in terms of how we interpret the query and Boolean, non-Boolean, and ors, implied ors, or not. And so once we got the thing working, it was sort of like, all right, let's move forward.
I just love seeing my name.
We'll send you the video.
I'm the only person who uses web.
You're the only person in our document corpus.
That's really surprising, actually, that nobody else has web.
Can you just search for web? Lowercase.
Is it case sensitive?
No, actually what's happening is we are using standard Lucene mechanism to search through a query. So what Lucene might be using is a combination of AND and OR. Semantic and web to appear in some probability of each other, which I think is the case.
And why wasn't Paul Yeager in the previous one?
Because he might not have semantic.
You didn't say anything.
Right,
was yeah.
513
just
web as a capital W?
Because
to me, that is not
the same.
That, I mean, that would make sense. I might be the only one with a capital web.
Is it doing all operations, whether it's semantic web or it's web?
Both the results
should come up, right?
Right, that's what I think. It's using a combination of AND and OR.
So you use it more percent.
You only have semantic documents we have. The only document that contains
semantic is your... Because he touched on a few things that if we had more time, we could work on. Another thing that was learned was some of the professors don't want their name given out for being an expert. Like, if there was a system like this and people want to search for information retrieval, maybe Dr. Ward doesn't want his name given out. So there's kind of, in the future, there would be an option given to professors. We don't want to be included on this list. We won't,
Do not call.
And as Jason was touching on, I mean, this is searching solely only documents. So if we were to do it more thoroughly, we would include course catalogs, because obviously someone is teaching the category, the course would hopefully have expertise in it. And we'd use their profiles as well, see if they have a degree in it. Dr. Ward might not publish as many papers on information retrieval, which is why we weren't coming up with that first.
Or maybe everything's information retrieval, so I don't see it necessary to use those words.
That could be the case. There's a number of things that we should do to expand on. Any questions? Or
one more thing to add, like, we tried many options before using this particular system. Dr. Ward, we talked to him and then he told us you can use a common development environment on the portal, and then we tried Nudge as a system, and then there is a system called DBSite which we tried, and then the Lucene, of course. Nudge had the capability to crawl all of the intranet or the web. Maybe we can also specify to only crawl the domain of .umd.edu and then do the indexing and then do the search. But it was like too much of a work for us to do that much, so we gave up on that. We tried another system, DBSite, because earlier we were thinking of doing using a relational database. That system would have been particularly interesting, and we got it somewhat running, but due to time constraint, we finally switched to Lucene. That DBSite system, basically how it worked was you create a relational database like in a normal way. You have a document collection in the database, and you have a table with the facility details and everything. You make a joint table, and then you search on the document table and return the faculty results. And that system looked to be very promising, but it's just a time constraint and our expertise in making the database work with that. So we gave up that, but that was an interesting system to work on.
Okay, very good. We've been taking questions as we've gone, so we should thank this team. Would the next team please send their slides by email to my at maisaid@umd.edu. Mike, can you still hear us? Excellent. Okay, how do you guys want to work?
Thank you.
position on the doctoral opening? Are you in the winter? Oh, okay. So maybe you're resting in the spring. And is that the
better spring?
Well, maybe you want to spend your going to visit vacation.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Well, he wants to visit. He's like, oh, I
don't know if
you're having a party.
Yes. Actually, anything you said, the member of the
we might have a streaming webcast set up for you. I'll let you know as soon as I can.
Oh,
about people to find people. So we're doing our trick that we talked about in class where we're holding the elephant's nose just a little bit, because the jump from systems to people isn't quite as far as the jump from documents to music, but it's still a little bit of a jump. The indexer, you want to talk a little bit about what it does?
We are indexing all the content of the file. When we thought of excluding the bibliography part, because if, for example, a faculty has written a particular document in which he has not used those keywords many times, but he is referring to a faculty who has used that word in the title, so that will come up higher ranks than the faculty itself. So we thought about the best, since the system is being used by a person who needs information, like he may not be knowing anything about his topic. So it would give the faculty information as well as another faculty which might not be very related, but might be remotely related, but that could be of interest to the user. And our thought process was this would work out. And when we did the user study, we were very happy to see that it did. So especially one of the users was very happy that about the system results. I'll let you know more about that. But I think we are the only group here. We did the kind of two user study. One was last weekend. Till that time we did not have the ranking and all that stuff going on. So our system retrieved random order results. And we wanted to work on the ranking part. So, but still, like, some of the users could find advantages in that. We'll let you know about that. And finally today we did one more user study with the ranking rank system. So we'll tell you the advantages and disadvantages of both.
So we were able to achieve here what Ahmad just said, but we had not achieved those things when we originally ran back evaluations and our first user study. But we decided to do CLIS, like the other group did, but also anthropology, which was something a little bit different, to achieve a manageable collection size that we could test on, and then hopefully the diversity would prove that it could be scalable to a larger view. The ground truth judgments, we collected information needs from graduate students in the anthropology department. So we asked them, when you were searching for a sponsoring professor for your program, what was your information need and how would you phrase it? So our information needs came from realistic users in their words. And then we had the anthropology faculty member tell us who we should be finding. This gets back to searching documents, finding people. People have the opportunity to give you feedback in a way that documents can't. So an actual person who would know, yes, this person would be an expert on this, is giving you some feedback.
And we chose the harmonic mean as our judgment point. By having those relevant judgments from a faculty member, we had a pretty good idea of what a true recall would be, and then we were able to use a measure that gave us some information on both precision and recall. For the user study, there was an individual component and a group component. Four people used the system, three of whom were anthropology students, one of whom was a PLIT graduate, and they provided us feedback as they were working on the system, the query terms they decided to use, up to three queries per information need, and then comments about what results they got using those query terms. And then after everyone had used the system, we talked to them as a group, so they were able to dialogue and play off of each other's ideas and say, oh, I didn't observe that, or but now that you mentioned it, that's true, or no, I disagree with you there. So it was very, very useful. Perhaps our most unique research question was whether or not our display, which we'll show you in just a second, is better, worse, or no different than a quick display of keywords and context. So our system currently gives you a static list of research interests that the person has identified on their web page. And we wanted to know is how does that compare to a system like Google that highlights those words in context. And we gave them a 5-point Likert scale to evaluate your confidence in the system based on what you can see on the results page. So this is a screenshot we gave them of what a quick result set might look like using the search term anthropology. And do you want to pull up a comparison shot quickly of what our actual results page looks like? I'm going to do a quick survey of who you, which one you like better. And then we'll tell you what our users thought. Showed up in all the documents we searched, and here the system is just saying this is what the person has reported that their research interest is. Who prefers the quick? Nobody prefers quick? Okay, we've got some quick votes over here.
We're learning that that was our intended, similar to our intended outcome of the actual.
Right. And who prefers the static list? Okay. All right, so there's some controversy here, which is good. So by the numbers, this is what our users had to say. Only one felt more confident in the keyword display that the results were better. But then it got interesting because it's more than just numbers. When they looked at the quick page, they told us about, I see your system is better here because it's searching more documents. And we explain, no, it's not searching more documents, it's just showing you that a little bit better, so it's transparent. But it turns out that the static keywords list really helps with this idea of visceral information needs. If I see archaeology, and all I'm seeing in the quick results is where it says archaeology, that's all I get to know about the person on the results page. But if I see that it's also New World Native Cultures or industrial archaeology, I'm learning about the context of the whole person's research interest and not just the context of my query term. So this was, they, people found this helpful. I didn't even know I was looking for that, but I found it. And I said, you don't know it, but you're talking about the girl information needs.
Just one quick note on that. So that's why we think that recall in this case is pretty important to us. I know precision plays a huge role, but also since, because we did a user study after that, we had a like questionnaire kind of thing where they filled out their confidence and, in the system and all other feedback, and then we had a focus group meeting. So we actually discussed this out with other users. So what they found was like, okay, I was, first thing was known item retrieval. Because we gave them four queries for information needs, based on which they had to formulate their query. And then the fifth one was a blank, that additional information need, which they had to formulate on their own and then search for the keyword. And one of the users started this discussion that, okay, I knew that this faculty member was working on this, but these two names also came up. So they just started this conversation. Okay, I didn't know this was, she was also working on this. They were like, yeah. So recall is kind of good because you are actually exploring, want more information about faculty members. So if Google gives you like 1,000 documents, we are limiting it to 10 faculty members. Then it's up to them to email the faculty members and speak personally. But we better narrow it down and narrow it down to people who are directly related to the research area and also to people who are remotely related, but they might be also of interest to the user.
Okay, so conclusions on the user study. There aren't any easy answers. There are pros and cons to any way to conceive of displaying the results. And we kind of like our keyword display. And we like the reasons that people gave for liking the keyword display. But I'm sure that someone else could do a user study with the same two pictures and draw the opposite conclusion. Like he was saying, a known item retrieval should probably be tested before you move further, because we probably could have worked a lot of kinks out of our system before moving on to the user study if we had really started from that place. And that's kind of repetitive. No matter what's provided on the screen, access to detailed information is essential. One person had said, you know, I'm going to click on the professor's name to get to their website to look at more information, no matter what you show me on that results page. So at the end of the day, they liked having more diverse information on the results page because they were going to follow that trail anyway. Now, if you want to play with the system some? Oh, of course, future development. I missed the slide. there was a suggestion that we allow some sort of more transparency since the static display doesn't give it and the quick does, but there are reasons to like the static display. Giving some sort of score, ranking, how does the system find this information, why is it ranked so high? Being able to automate the process of finding documents to support why a faculty member is an expert in a certain topic would take us a long way. And having a link for pages similar to the current page, remotely related, but maybe of interest to the user. The privacy and security issue is kind of what the last group said is their closing idea too, that people may not want to be found. We're not communing with documents and dead authors the way we talked about in the first class. We're trying to have a live conversation with a live person. They just want to be left alone. So that's a potential problem with, and again, with crawling research court and with crawling the web pages, some of the anthropologists do said, I didn't find a person I expected to find from the search, but I know they haven't updated their web page in a long time. So you can't force people to keep their information up to date, and that's a problem. Any questions, or do you want to?
I was wondering how your system extracted the research area information in the left side interface.
It's stored in the database, and this is information directly from people's home pages. Like if you look at a Cliff professor on their home page, it says research interest, but there's a list.
Right, but I guess how did your system know where on the page? I mean, was it manually entered, or did you have any concerns about how that might scale, or what you might do to overcome that if this is where we scaled, you know, so that it could automate that part of the process?
It is helpful. It is helpful to see it. I think part of the challenge is to find out how information is being stored by the different departments. And on the anthropology webpage, they're very consistent. And everybody's bio has a thing that says research interest and a list. So your system can look for that phrase, research interest.
You just have to think you tailored to every different school. We have the same.
Yeah. Well, the university actually gathers this information.
So you guys talked a little bit about
I spoke with, I happen to work in foreign relations office for engineering, so spoke with the director and the coordinator who actually has to call upon the faculty to talk to the press. Maybe the eventual use of it, and they said that, you know, half times it's not as useful because most of the faculty use
you're talking about the system that the public relations office maintains, and most people don't have their information.
Right.
The university does maintain this information in the FAR, and you are required as faculty members to update it and put it in there, or else you don't get a raise.
It's a remarkably successful process. It's amazing how well it works.
Does it fix the other side of the problem where, okay, yes, they update the information, yes, you can find them, but when you call them and say, hey, we'd like to have you interview these so and so, and they're still not forced to participate?
No, then they're on travel.
But that information is also required to be public. There's a sort of contract thing the university has, which is, if you want your raise, you give us your FAR data, and it's public.
We get to know who they are.
Okay, you guys are going to give us a demo. Mm-hmm.
So I'll talk about the user study along with this. So basically, in one of the lectures regarding the user study, as you said, like users, the technical people should be kept away from the users. And I was like, why? Because if you mention the instruction, it should be pretty easy to use. I believe you know. I was just standing behind the system, and the user is using it. And it was for a couple of days, like at that time, like last weekend, we had to use the double quote to put more than one word query. So we had put instructions about that, but still they were not using it as it was supposed to be. So I was like just standing there and I was like, do it this way. You said they should just be separated with a glass pane or something. So what we did was we added the home page is the instruction page. So they have to read it now. During the focus group also we asked them like, how many of you read the instructions? And we couldn't, that's it. Okay, so. This is our basic search. So, any searches?
Information organization. You're doing well.
Okay, so why we have so many results? Because it is using the OR operation. Either information or organization. So obviously information is there in almost all the documents.
Still, you got the Eckerberg circle first. You got a running start here.
Okay, so this is the problem. So we had only a basic search previously. So then within this week, we were funded and we had the advanced search thing. So this is like a kind of mini Google thing. And so this will use the AND operation, the NOT, and the exact print. So here, what we, information organization, in the basic search, we had to type it in double quote. Here, we don't need to do that, in the exact print. So let's try it here. Okay, two results. So the AND code has used it more often. And that's the problem, like, we said it in our previous update, project update also, like we are not indexing the professor's mind, we are indexing whatever is out there, the document. And if you are an expert in information retrieval, and if you haven't mentioned those words many times in your document, none, then you won't show. Or if you have mentioned a couple of times, you won't get a higher rank. And, yeah, any other queries you want to try? And yeah, one more thing. And one of the users also said that Google uses did you mean this thing. So this does not take care of the misspelled word. It's not spelled correctly. There's no way to catch that if it's a long query. And I'll show you an example about that. So we saw the results set for archaeology. There are three professors. Let's have a look at archaeology. There are many more. it's also the word, how you use it, and if you have misspelled it, and if you can't recognize it, then you think, okay, there's no person in this business is the chicken. So that's what we would like to include. That's why I said the third one, like similar pages. So if it's remotely related or if it's part of the word, then two, if it comes up, then the user realizes, okay, I had made this mistake. And then maybe he goes to the faculty web page, or else he would revise his query. So, anything?
Okay, very good. We can talk further over break, but is there a final question? So I have a final question.
Nancy met with your team before you got started?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. And with your team before you got started?
Yes.
How important was that in your ability to do the project and to use it as a basis for learning rather than just sort of figuring out how to get started? Was it a critical step or just useful, or could have done it equally well with it?
I think it's a useful step because we learned that it's not so difficult to use Lucene and do the basic operations such as indexing and searching through that. So. Was it made us happy that yeah this can we can work it out and get the system right at least this much.
By the time you met her, we had already figured it out how to make you see more. Mm-hmm. We had created a dummy index of some document. So, but I mean, this gave us some useful idea. Yeah, it will work if we go further ahead. So,
you know, how about your team?
Initially, when we heard about the project, our initial intention was it's a relational database. So that's what we our thought process was. And then suddenly we realized, like, wait a minute, where are all the indexing and all the other concepts that we learn in the class? And so then I had a chat with Dr. Wood, and then he got me on track, okay, what are we doing here exactly? Then we met Manti, and it was very useful for us also because we got a starting system, but just a starting system. And then so we had like four faculty members in that, and a couple of documents, but it was very useful to understand how the system works so that we could make all these additional features. But for us also, I know we are not allowed to say, but it was very useful. So,
why are you not allowed to say that?
No, you said that's not how to question. Okay, so, but once we understood that, it took us some time because we did not have much Java knowledge or Lucene knowledge. Lucene, none of us knew, but Java, a couple of us had some experience, so that really takes like 2-3 weeks ahead. So that was very helpful. And just one quick suggestion, like when in the project, when you say like there are three technical people and three non-technical people in a group, so technical users, like if you have taken even one programming course,
okay, thank you very much. We're running a bit behind, which is going to cost us some time at the end of the day. If people are willing to stay late or don't want to hear about the final exam, either one is fine. Otherwise, we'll compress things in the next session. Is there anyone that has a preference one way or another? We'll continue as we are. Very good. Thank you very much for coming and for your help with getting started.
My pleasure.
So we'll take a 10-minute break. Okay, well, let's see. Still there? All right, you're still there? You're awake, okay. Okay, Becca. I'm going to see if I can set you up to project.
Yes.
And if I lose you, I'll still be connected on the other one, Dexter.
I'm going to go to the next one.
I think that's fine, but I also think generally the standard is appropriate for the kind of students.
Yes.
The fourth grade class is a one thing I have said is that it might be worthwhile to have a program for our students.
We do.
What is that?
Yes.
Is it in, so Jenny didn't say anything yet.
So you want to understand a little bit what's in there.
We should also remove it so people don't ask me. I mean, I don't mind talking to people, but the CS department is not so happy about taking
them. Oh, yeah, well, and also students can't get graduate credit for
130
or whatever. And the 4-hour course is designed to be adapted. Right, which is not what our course is designed to do. Our course is designed to let you figure out whether or not you're interested in
okay.
So it's there. It's not, I mean, it's, you know, it's not one session of other than one session of days, but, you know, the entire CFA is directed to students.
No, but I mean, people need to. Oh, I mean, I think it's just from these two presentations, it sounds like students would benefit greatly from the technology.
Yes, but that course, so we also have a programming course in PHP. So the PHP course, the other course, and this course are all students that can choose any one. And next time I teach this course, I'm the teacher of this program. It turned out to be more of the students than I expected. Not because their preparation was appropriate, but because I wasn't thinking about this, about what they would need to do to keep the pressure. So I was trading more on their background than was appropriate for
that.
Yeah, take a look at my website on 790. And take a look at Young's stuff. I don't know what she keeps up with. Ryan taught it in between Young and Young. So I think he's it wasn't designed as a job course. That wasn't its original for next week, I will send you an email with the
thank you.
Yep. Okay, Maya, you still there?
Hello, class. This is Maya Wamora here, and as you all know, I'm abroad, so my presentation will be a little illustration of what I did. I'll see the bilingual search engine.
I said it sounds great.
Sort of created First of all, what did I do? I created a system that does the following. First of all, it's indexes, Arabic, and English documents. So far, I've worked on documents. Test documents, Word documents, and documents that were edited for TREC and TREC format, and I have not tried PDFs. I do not get the time to do, but...
Can you send me your slides,
please?
Four
different
pages.
You're talking about maybe sending out maybe an extra column for
for screenshots.
I'm not able to hear you very well. Can I say it one more time?
Well, I mean, they're small on the laptop.
As soon as you close it, I'll lose you here.
Yeah, the big thing is that it's got the left hand. Yeah, the ink, so it's not that way. Seriously, I was waiting for him to make a screen. Make it monochrome.
Because that's how I got your thing up on the PowerPoint. And I just took a screenshot of the Word document.
Yeah,
and then I had to do another Word document and not give me an image.
One more team, then we'll do mine, then we'll do the last team. Who's next? You guys? Okay. Well, Mike, can you hear me okay? Okay, we're going to defer you for a moment so that I can get your files loaded onto the right machine. So you'll go one more group later, if that's okay.
Thank you.
pictures. Which one's you? Which one are you?
So it's a bookmark system, and we've gone through a number of names for this, but I was sold on lexical bookmarks. And that was probably from literature, which already had a concept of lexical signatures. So we're not even quite transitions, we're just our goal is to create a bookmark system that would allow you to create bookmarks that would work in a dynamic system. By that I mean documents are being added, subtracted from the system. In the worst case, documents are also being edited, so people can go into your collection and change things. But your bookmarks would still at least have a hope for if they did that. There are a variety of systems that sort of meet that criteria and could use these kinds of bookmarks. A simple one would be like a personal knowledge base where you have a hard drive full of documents that you've indexed and are working on. You might be able to search them. A more elaborate one is the company where I work at, Nexus, which has several terabytes, or maybe more now, of articles that don't have document IDs. And so you can't use a document ID to bookmark. You have to remember your search or something like that. So that'll be one way to, just this office one way to do it. The approach that we use is based on the perfect query paradox, which is that the search engines we have are really very good, and they'll do exactly what you tell them to, and if you tell them the right thing, they'll find exactly what you want. The problem is that the user doesn't know how to compose the perfect query for the search engine. So we thought, well, if you're going backwards and you already have a document in hand, the system ought to be able to build the perfect query for itself. Because you get to pick all the rules, right? You get to pick the search term. So that's what we did basically, was to try to construct a bookmarking system around that concept, that if you've got the document, the system ought to know what the system needs to get that document again in the collection. The things we need to do were to be able to bookmark any document, and then number two, the more challenging thing, was bookmarking any passage in a document. Beyond that, there are some things you need to do to make it useful in other places. I mean, the idea is this is sort of a proof of concept system, and the idea is it would plug into some bigger system, such as a simple toolbar, perhaps, to more elaborate personal knowledge-based system or enterprise knowledge-based system. For our proof of concept system, all we ask you to do is that you be able to label your bookmarks any way you want to, so you can find them later. Real quick, I talked about this last time I was standing up here, which is the literature that exists on this. There are basically two approaches to finding documents again, and one of them is fingerprinting, which I call the sort of non-human or machine approach to it, where you use the physical things to the document to find out what separates it from all, what defines it, as opposed to all other documents. And there's no way human beings can look at that and make sense of it. I guess one way to think about it is you could do document fingerprinting as easily for a JPEG as you could for a text file. There's just nothing in the information that really would speak to humans. The other way to go at it is with a lexical signature approach, where you pull out the rare terms, the high TF, IDF terms from your document and use those to construct a search. And we'll elaborate about how we went about creating a really sort of unique search doing that. And the bullet points list is the ways these different approaches have been used, and give us slightly different approaches. I just comment there that for both of those, the biggest, just about all the research is on using on the web, which was the one thing we didn't try to do, and we didn't have a lot of interest in trying to do it on the web. But you can imagine that's where everyone's excited about the web and doing this magical permanent bookmarks on the web, but I'm not sure how practical that is given that amount of churn on the web. The system that we built was based on Lucene, like so many other systems tonight, and we used the Lucene interface to build it, and it basically has two forms. There's a form that lets you generate your bookmark and a form that lets you retrieve your bookmark. And then Greg also built the third form just for us, which was a batch testing form that lets you run 1,000 searches with search criteria, with parameters for the way the queries were built into each run that way. So we actually did most of our batch evaluation automatically. We didn't actually have best testers in there and plugging in terms to find if we got the right thing, which if you can do it, I highly recommend. To explain real quickly, I think I said this, the way that generator works is that it will take terms that have that are unusual, that is, they're unusual and occur a lot in the document, and this is the reasoning that Greg went through as he built the generator, which was, let's scan the document. We've already indexed the collection, so we know the term frequencies and the IDFs for all the terms in the collection. Somebody picks the document with a bookmark, scan the document, find the terms that have high TF, IDF score in that document, and then look for terms that are high scoring that occur fairly close to each other, and call those phrases. We seem kind of casual about what it means by a phrase, but if these couple of unusual terms occur pretty close to each other, we'll treat it like a phrase, and then we'll combine several of those phrases into our search query. So we've sort of got this exponential increase in rarity going on here, starting with rare terms, combining them, and then combining combinations of rare terms to get something that really should only occur in that one document, hopefully. This is the system that we have working here, and what I thought I'd do is give you a quick demonstration, and then Greg can talk a little bit about some of the mechanics that are going on behind the scenes. I think it might actually make more sense to interrupt at this point and ask questions rather than a question period. There's going to be a demo of this part, which is the document level bookmark, and then I'm going to demo passage level bookmarking.
Why don't we just do an example and then take a question?
Yeah. Okay, let's search on, this is not part of what we built. Basically, we just had a collection of about 12,000 documents that we managed to obtain from Wikipedia. And I'll explain about that too as we run the batch testing. We wanted documents that had changed over time, and so Wikipedia was nice because we could find the same documents a year ago and see how they look. So what I have here on the left side of the screen is a list of document IDs, which mean nothing to us and nothing to you. And then in the reading pane, you can see the document that my search for Canada came up with. Again, this is just a way of working through the collection. What I would do with the user here is sort of scroll through these and say, oh, backpacking in Canada. I like this document. Hopefully it's not stuff. So I want this document. Well, yeah, but I don't have the collection. I want this document. I'm going to create a bookmark for it by clicking on Generate Bookmark. And you can see down here in the fine print, which I will blow up for you, we've created a query based on the high TF-IDF terms in that document. And the tilde has to do with the proximity requirement for the phrase. So there's a query that we're going to save. So I save the bookmark, get a name like backpacking, save, and if I want to retrieve my document now, and it's years later, and I remember, there was that great article on backpacking in Canada, Wikipedia, but I can't remember how to search Wikipedia, so I want to come here. And just my bookmark with the label that I created. And you know, you can elaborate that. So not only can I create labels, I just create tags, whatever other things you can imagine to organize your work, folders, virtual folders, something like that. So this is a proof of concept. So I put my bookmark and then I run the find and voila. It came back with one document, which is kind of a best case scenario. Sometimes it'll come back with multiple documents. I'll take a breath there because I know I'll be talking real fast.
I think I know the answer, but I'll ask the question anyways. Why is your approach of finding a select few of the high IDF phrases better than just doing a query of all the words that are in the document?
It's shorter.
It's more efficient. And also, it's more, if you query every, if you add everything together and then one word changes, it's one phrase.
Okay,
2%. So you can, when you do this, it gives you, you can build a little.
But your argument is still true if they change one of the words that you, that was a high IDF word that you built your query on, if that changes, it will break too, right?
Well, no, it shouldn't. And the batch evaluation results will show that to a degree. Because basically you don't just take one phrase, you take a lot of phrases, you know, just they require all the terms. Require almost all
of the terms. Yeah, we took a lot of advantage of the way Lucene works with relevancy and proximity.
If you go back to the generator tab, like everything below here would be transparent to a user, but these are all the different things that you can take over to Lucene and say, you know, okay, I want to make sure there's at least four terms in every phrase, and I want to make sure there are at least as many phrases, and I want to set the phrase to be bigger. And by playing with those,
actually. That's a good question, yeah.
But is the space, the query that would encapsulate all the words in the background, is really going to be that much bigger?
I think part of it is that's a kind of a brute force, old-style bullying query, and it doesn't take advantage of relevance or anything like that. And if you took all the words in the document and did a relevancy search, you might not get that document. Because there might be another document in which those, you know, it's sure what your document occurred more often.
Right.
If you're doing like an old style LexisNexis search where you could say, and, you know, if the document doesn't contain all those words, it will not return. But in the scene, it will.
In the pathological case, you have two documents that are contain entirely the same bag of words, but they're ordered entirely different things, and that's sort of great to get you the same value.
That's a really good point, yeah. It's actually better than and the term documents, if you don't have phrases.
I believe you.
No, this is a really good question. We were kind of going along with that when we were designing it. Would it be better if we required, you know, absolutely, these two terms have to be next to each other in the search. Greg was coming up with a routine to realize that now you can kind of think of it as human options.
And it's actually, the routine has built in a kind of baseline. So basically, we've seen more like this query basically grabs the top 25 terms and all the other relationship queries. I mean, so we started off trying that, and that didn't behave as well as what we had.
Thank you.
Any other questions, like I said? Let me go on that passage tree.
Okay, let's do a passage tree.
This is trickier. So do passage retrieval. What we ended up doing, and this was part that Tom wrote, was to create the same query generator that Greg used, but use it just on the passage of user selected. And that has one drawback in that the user has to select a big enough passage to have enough terms in the search. And another drawback in that you're treating the passage like a document, and it's not as good as treating the document like a document. I'll show you what I mean by that. And having done the batch evaluation of the passage myself, I can. You can tell you this is probably a good passage. It's about a paragraph long and it's got some obscure words in it, like Amherstburg. So I highlight the passage I want, click generate bookmark, and it creates a query here, which again I can save. And then I can go to the retriever side and find it. And search on it and see the yes. Okay. In this display, the passage that I retrieved is here, and the whole document is up here. And as you can see, it wasn't a great result because what it started about was it skipped the word support Malden. So what it's doing behind the scenes is it has divided the document into sections and it has been evaluated which of those sections is the most relevant to the search that we ran. And I'll show you our best results in a second and how well that works. You can imagine there's kind of problems with this. One problem is attention. If you're a mean tester like I was, you can pick passages that actually have a lot of common words and you can get 100 documents back and your document fits one down, which is kind of weird. But when you open them up, they have passages that actually have your search terms in them, so kind of good. You can also notice that we put these around the search terms that we use. So it was kind of ideally we would have highlighted it, but decided that HTML tags were close enough. Any questions on this? I've still got it up. Or am I going to try to batch evaluation?
What were the batch evaluations?
Why? Or, we looked at these following measures. We call it one. The great thing about this project was we didn't care about precision. We didn't have to do any precision measures because either it's the right document or it's not. So we didn't have to have evaluators telling us, well, it's kind of like what I wanted. Out. Either it's the document we wanted or it's not. So all we cared about was how tight the list it was and did we even find it. But we also cared about how good the bookmarking system was. Would it withstand changes to the collection? So we had three kinds of changes we looked at. Increasing the size of the collection by adding more documents, replacing some of the documents in the collection, and creating versions of documents in the collection. That is, having two copies of the same document, it's like they're in the same collection. What your deputy sent is.
It's just been copy edited, but it says essentially the same thing.
Oh, what?
What does that
You guys, I mean, the idea that the IR approach to this is that she needs to use metadata. So if you can't use metadata, you can't really declare this document as self-identical because, you know, if you make a copy of it, you put them next to each other, they're numerically different documents. There's two of them, and yet from an IR perspective, they're equally valid. So if you had metadata, you could assign them different document IDs, or you could have version dates to make them different documents. You don't really have the same.
Okay, so by version you mean it's really the same document,
just copy. Well, what we actually did for a test was we used Wikipedia data and looked at Year Ago documents. You know, what we didn't do is we didn't analyze how much those documents had changed in the year. But we assumed that they would actually, some of them would have substantial changes, and some of them would have hardly any changes. I saw papers on this kind of thing where people computed the vectors of the documents and said, oh, well, it changed, 18%. We believe that was not in our what we did, this is the result of the batch evaluation of the document retrieval, where we could run 1,000 documents at a time, and we could tune the query. This is what our standard tuning for the query, and showed that, I have no idea how long it was talking.
You've been talking too long, but that's okay. my stuff is not yet ready to be done.
You can perform really, very well with a stable collection at, what we did for growth was we had 30% more documents to it. We held back some documents from our collection, about 12,000 articles, and we added 30% more in, and it really didn't hurt the retrieval that much. In these tests, we did not re-index the collection, we generated the bookmarks. So we generated the bookmarks before we messed up the collection, and we'll see if they still work afterwards. And it worked pretty well. With the change in the versioning, these were really dramatic. The change, we actually took the Year Ago Wikipedia articles, generated the bookmarks, threw those out, took the current version of the same Wikipedia article, and these are the results of trying to search for the same version a year later. And they really did pretty well. With the versioning, we just threw those two sets together, so there were actually two copies of every document, and we still came out with the same very high 99% type scores on. And the way we got the scores was we had document IDs that we used for scoring, but we didn't use them for retrieval. So after we're done, we could say, did I find the document that I wanted?
So for the versions, when you had in the presence of multiple versions of the same document, you would score if you got back the specific version that was used to create the bookmark?
Yes.
Okay. And it was the recall of one, so basically did it come back first, did go right down.
Okay, I'm going to break through here from talking to one. We did testing on and tuning those parameters, like I said, and if you try hard, you can purge it, it doesn't work as well. This is the result of the passage retrieval, which, as you can see, is much more challenging. Getting the exact passage was kind of an unfair test, which was kind of designed to bring back the section that was most relevant, but when I was reading it, if the words I wanted weren't at the top, I failed it. So it was kind of nasty. So I adjusted that by saying if it's within 500 characters, which is not really very far, I counted it in this score, and it came back at about 73%, which is not great. I think it's kind of strange. So you
said like users. I cannot return the exact passage the user selected, but I can give the hint that user can see what he was processed before. But the hint, you cannot the exact passage because consider the change of the version. If you do not use the position of the word, you cannot give.
And David, if the user type can place some comments. Your reaction to it.
When you can talk back.
Everyone is staying late because.
So essentially, we had 5 users from where I work, and we did 4 IOs up there. And currently, I think he's actually intelligence research specialist. And it's basically individuals who have a need for the kind of system, in my opinion, that's something we could actually use for work. And I use them because basically they have a need, and we use documents quite a bit, and we want to find passages within those documents because we only want, you know, one to put things in the document, and we need to move on to the document data. In general, for we use basically the documents of the New York Times to go through and specify passages and provide documents and basically tell us how they felt about it. 14 questions, general questions. What do you think about this? What could you improve? What did you like? What did you like? What do you see applications for the system? The thing that I like is they gave it about an 8.4% rating out of a 10-point scale, with one being 2.5 unusual, 10 being extremely. Some of the things that we suggested to improve the system, we had another interface for us to cut down clickability. Because you know, like, to use our system, there's a lot of clicks involved, and for a lot of them, they're not really attracting. In terms of passages, they thought they really liked the passage functionality. That was one of the favorite features of the system, but they were a little bit frustrated when they didn't. Like when they came back, they didn't get a passage view of the document. What I mean by that is that when they pulled it back up, sometimes they had to scroll down a bit. And most of them thought that that was not necessarily a negative, but they wanted it highlighted some way to see it. Another thing, my way, you know, working short here, is that they, with the passage, sometimes get the error message that, hey, the passage is too short, and they really want to know what the parameters were for selecting the passage. And a related note, they also wanted to know, if they had saved a bookmark, because there was no system feedback. Again, you're talking about mistakes. In terms of applications, one individual noted that competitive intelligence was one field against the field where you just want a clear description on the president of a corporation and you're running through 1,000 documents using the technical information. So if someone's reading a report and says, hey, I got this information about this guy here. Another example was that would say that we had one individual who was getting married soon and he was like out there looking for some wedding stuff. About that, but they want wedding stuff. And so he's also often reading an article and it's like, hey, that particular stuff is of use to her. And considering that they both have the same document, she has like be able to send it to her and say, hey, honey, look at this. This is what I was talking about earlier.
So get some problems, I'm not sure what we're going with it, but it's definitely. Oh, yeah, I'm keep figuring out. And then we should put time on that question.
Okay, very good. Let me see. If
Because it's my language and it's
very interesting for me to know more about how it's dealt with, how much research has been done there, because of course I have to do research and see how much is out there that I can use. So how did I do it? For the indexing, I used Lucene library indexing capability, and it was very helpful, of course. I did have to build around it, of course, the interface and customize how it would work to make it work for me. That's for the English. For the Arabic, it was a different story, because, of course, as you know, Lucene is a standard analyzer, or the analyzers that are available in the Lucene library do not support Arabic. They do support other languages, but not Arabic. I did find an Arabic analyzer, and it was very interesting working with it because it's a very old program, it's open source, of course, and it hasn't been used, or at least hasn't been updated for some time. And some of the methods were deprecated, some of the code did not really work as well as it, I guess, it used to. So what I did was I brought this analyzer, the source, not just the library, the classes, but the source with the Java. And I made it as a project, and I edited whatever I had to edit, got rid of the methods that were causing problems, added a little stuff so it would work better with my program. And I can actually show you how I did this. So here we have the Arabic analyzer with the source packages that has all data in here in the Java. And then what I did was I compiled it again, and it gave me a new jar file, and I used that jar file with my program. I tried using the highlighter. I think I talked to another member from another group about this, and it was giving her as much trouble as it was giving me, but I just gave up on it at the end. It was very difficult to make it work, maybe in the future. So, my system accepts Arabic and English queries. I had a problem with that because at first the encoding didn't really work very well. I did not understand that everything has to be one encoding, and not all encodings work together, because the encoding of the characters on my system and the encoding of the characters of the scene and the encoding of characters in the Arabic analyzer, they all have to be the same. And to get to that point, I had to look around in the Arabic analyzer code and to make sure that my computer was using UTF-8. In the end, all the documents were using, all the different indexing and search capabilities were using UTF-8. And that's when the Arabic characters match well with the English characters, and it worked. So, and then it decides, the system decides if the query is Arabic or English. This was very important for me because I have two indexes and I have two collections that are different from each other. So, I use a method in the Arabic analyzer called IsArabic, but sadly, there were a lot of problems in the class and IsArabic itself was connected, so I couldn't really get to it to the library itself, so I took it and I integrated it into my own code, and that worked well. Searching the index according to the language, of course, as I mentioned before, we have two indexes, and depending on the language of the query, the system decides which index it's in a search, and searches that index with the necessary analyzer, stemmer, etc., etc. So I use standard analyzer for English and the Arabic gloss analyzer for Arabic. And each one of them uses a different stemmer and different, they have a lot of other classes that they use as well. Oh, I'm running out of time. Okay, so it displays the files according to the terms. I showed you this before. I tried to make it look nicer with the highlights and all that, but actually getting the system to index Arabic and search Arabic took a lot of time and effort, because there were small things that I just couldn't find, and once I found them, there wasn't enough time for me to look at it. But as I said, it can be done later on. And I use, in the Arabic analyzer, there are functionalities that tell you, they map the Arabic word to an English word meaning. For example, if you tell them, if I say I'm looking for, let's say, Saeed, which means happy, it will tell you that I'm looking for happy. So that was a very interesting thing, and I added it. So, okay, let's see, let's talk about how well did the system do. So I did a very, very small batch evaluation. The document collections that I used were TDT, phase 3. These were used for topic detection in the, I think it was drug, I'm not sure though. I used about 57 or so documents. For the Arabic, I used the Arabic Newswire, and these were 40 documents. The queries were, I used two queries for each language. I used North Korea Nuclear, because this was an issue at that time, still is, and I used North South Korea Nuclear to see how the language, the query language, is different. And for Arabic, I used Hezbollah Tabannat, which means Hezbollah adopted. In Arabic, Hezbollah are two words. So I used Hez plus Allah Tabannat to do the same as I did in English. And the number of judges was 3. So the results, these are the results. In general, the first English, the second English query did better than the first with a plus, but not much better. And I think it's in part because there wasn't enough documents. There weren't enough documents. And I think my batch evaluation is just a demonstration of how to do an evaluation, or that we can actually do it on the system. But I don't know how accurate it is. The Arabic did much better. And the second query did, of course, better than the first one, but in general, the Arabic query did better than the English query. Here's precision for English. For English 1, the query without the plus, and for English 2, the query with the plus. Of course, we got the first, as you see in recall and precision, we got the first relative document before all the others. Which did not happen in the without plus query. And then goes for Arabic. I had more relevant results in Arabic, and they were put better in the system as well. So, and this is the mean average precision. It was 0.457 for English and 1.23 for Arabic. So I'd say that it did better in Arabic than it did in English. So what are the big things that I learned? Well, I learned that you can create an accessible search engine from the skills and knowledge we learned in class, which was a bit of a surprise for me, but I was very happy that I actually could create this small thing. And using open source code, you can create a program and utilize it to what you see best. If you have open source information retrieval, I know that you can change it, you can customize it to make it work better for what you want. You don't just have to stick what is out there. And that is nice. Indexing and searching programs are mostly made for English. Dealing with other languages will bring about new challenges. As we discussed more in class, that not only the internet is English, as I saw, even information retrieval, the programs in general are mostly made for English. And some of them support other languages, most of them don't. And with each language, you have new challenges and problems that come up. And if there was, I think there should be more research and more dealing with these problems, so that way we can search other languages better. When evaluating programs, the results might not be very accurate or dependable if the quality and quantity of queries are not high enough. So, although I did a very small batch evaluation, but I think that if it had more queries and better queries, it would give better results, which is, I know it's apparent. And one more thing I learned was that in information retrieval, the possibilities are so many that you cannot make something perfect. You can only do the best you can. And I'm very happy I learned all that I learned in information retrieval so far. And I think for my program, there is so much more to do, and I might even go on doing more in the winter because it was a lot of fun. It was exciting. It was very frustrating sometimes, but I had a great time working with this. And let me show you what my little system does. First of all, I want to show you the indexes, just so you see that it does index. This is where my index is, and as you see, it has 57 documents, and this is the number of terms that it indexed. These are the top 50 terms. This is, I don't know if, I guess some of you use Loop before to look through your indexes. It works with Lucene, and it's very helpful because you can look by document, and you can see the terms that were indexed by every document. And this is for my this is the second index, and this is the first one. This one is the English, and this one is the Arabic. Of course, in the Arabic, what the Arabic index does is takes the words in English and it indexes them in Arabic. It takes the words in Arabic, indexes them in English, and then, as you see, it searches, it indexes, and then it takes a query, it translates it into English, and then, as you see, the search becomes English to English. So, this is my system, and for example, I will look for happy. And as you see, because it's English, it's only searched in the English part. You see, this is where all my English collection is. And if you search for, I will search for happy in Arabic, which is happy. Yeah, this, it takes some time, as you see, until the index, the Arabic index is much slower than the English. The Arabic searcher is much slower, and I think that is one more thing we can work on to create a better indexing and searching system. So, I'll just put a little bit more. And as you see, these are the documents, and they are all in the Arabic section. And here, searching for happy, says site, which this is what I wrote. So it takes the meaning as well as the vocal translation. So this is my little system. I hope you like it, and I will see you soon.
Okay, Nadia, you hear us now?
Yes.
Okay, we're ready to take questions. I'll repeat the question.
Where did you get the translations from?
Where did you get the translations from, Mike?
The translations of the documents?
So there are Arabic documents and English documents.
I think she said when she types in Arabic, it searches, translates to the search effect.
Right. You said that it translates the Arabic into English. Did you mean that it transliterates it or that it actually translates it?
It actually does both, and the dictionary is available through the Arabic Analyzer library.
Okay. Next question. Come on, it's 5:30 in the morning, and she has stayed up all night. When did your airplane land by?
3 hours before the presentation.
So you should have questions.
Oh, no, it's okay.
One more question? Very good. Maya, do you plan to stay with us for the rest of the session?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, excellent. Thanks.
Remember how to type a tilde on this thing?
You have to go through a whole semester without doing that.
Type the tilde, and then after you type the next character, it appears.
Type it twice?
Yeah, twice.
You get two, and then you
have to. Okay. I think that will work.
You can also back up and type it after you typed your word.
I see.
Which is what those of us with vowels started talking about too. Because it puts it over the letter.
Oh!
So if you type or and then go backwards and type your tilde, it shows up. I have no idea how to do that.
The time is yours if you want.
Everyone else made Okay, so you have both of the either one of these.
Our hypothesis for our project first is whether ontology helps people make the retrieval. So our mission is to address this question by evaluating two kinds of searching engines. And first we start from semantic word this term, and then we find out some issues. Yeah, and then later we find out four ongoing searching systems in internet, and due to some reason, finally we choose Mandy as our target. And unfortunately, they support semantic mode and keyword mode search both in their system, so that's our target. The structure of this semantic search is they create three kinds of ontologies, which is subject, verb, and object. So the idea of semantic is they can show you the term that is not exactly the same word, but they have the same meaning. Like if you type relate in the verb, they will show you the result includes like link or involve. Not only the relate this word. And this is keyword search that everyone knows very well. Our project all focused on evaluation, so we focus on batch evaluation and user evaluation. This is all the the methods and process we do. At first, we collect the health topics from medical students and general students. And since this is medical professional issue, so we ask a native speaker to generate our queries based on the guideline we set. In the semantic mode, we based on the information needs, we generate the subject, verb, and object. And in the keyword mode, we did a guideline that don't use what, where, how, why, if this kind of word. We have 5 assessments for the first round and 2 for the second round. Each assessor does 3 topics, and each topic will have 10 documents returned for them to judge. We have 4 levels of relevance. A, B, C, F. A is highly relevant, B is fairly relevant, C is partially relevant, and F is irrelevant. And we use 2 kinds of method in PR curve method. A and B are considered as relevant, and C and F are considered as irrelevant. In the new method, we figure out MDCG. A gains 3 points, B gains 2 points, C gains 1 point, and F gains. And in order to measure agreement between 2 raters, we also included Cohen-Hartkopf method. We measured 9 topics for our dual assessment from our self topics. And this is the formula. You also can get it from Dr. Orr's his paper. He included formula. And finally, we'll get a number that compared to this table, then we'll know the degree of agreement. We will show you the results later. And this is our evaluation method. First, the PR curve and the mean average precision we already know from class, so I won't talk about this a lot. Basically, they both are handled cases with binary judgment that is only relevant or irrelevant. And there's one thing noted in RECO, that is we set the relevant documents number for 20. It's not correct but comparable because we just want to compare the results.
And we just noted that if we can set the number to be an N or M, which is not the exact number, which works best.
And this is the new method that we find out from some research papers. That is NDCG, which stands for Normalized Discounted Commutative Gain. In the recent literature, the standard measure is mean average precision, but it may not reflect well the actual utility of system because from user's perspective, the user is usually looking at the first few results in the web search. So the idea for NDCG is highly, the second one, the lower ranking position a document has, the less value it is for the user. And also you want to deal with the multiple level of relevance. That is, a more highly relevant document should have more value. And last time we showed the formula, but we didn't talk it much. So this time I want to talk about this more. In this red part, it's again of the J document. Which computes the value based on the rating. That means the higher rating, they will get greater value. And then this is computed based on the position. If the position is lower, means the number is higher because if you add 10 positions, then the number is 10. So this result will be lower if the the position is, the number of position is higher. If you get it? And this is just cumulated all this past position. And then the, I think for us, we the most confusing part is normalized this part. This is normalized by the ideal situation. For example, if,
yes.
For example, in one topic, and the rating we get in real life is and in our case, the A will get 3 points, or the B will get 2 points. That's the real life case. But in ideal situation, the rating should be based on this, the rating should be 3, 2, 2, 1, 0. This is ideal situation. So how to normalize our results? We compute the ECG by this first, and then we compute the ideal ECG by this. And later we divide this by ideal one. So we'll get a normalized one. And after that, the NDCG is the average of all queries at position N. So we have 12 queries. So we calculate each NDCG. We calculate each NDCG for each query, and later we just come to the average. This is our topic today. As you can see, it's all about professional medical issues. So this is our result. For each topic, we consider the PR curve and then we have. And most of them, the semantic web is better than the keyword search.
The semantic one is the
blue one, and the purple one is keyword search. There are three cases that keyword search is better than semantic. That is topic two. So we are interested in that. We want to analyze the cause to this result. And we find out for the topic A, the reason for this result is the assessor's using correct way to judge. He just opened the page and used the search function that control F to see if the keyword in that article, but he's not really look through the article and see if it's relevant.
So that's look all the match between the semantic web.
And for the topic 2 and topic 12,
because we have some medical students involved with it, and she told us that the keyword search has more general information, so you get more B as its judgment. But in semantic one, they get results either A, it's really professional results, or C or F. So that's the reason called topic 2 and 12 that the keyword shows much better than semantic. But for professional use, semantic still better.
For example, we interviewed one of our assessors and she told us that, for example, the topic 12 was called the 2 and she said in the keyword search engine, all of the returns, they have the reason, but not that professional, which may have like drinking the Coke, drinking some other juice, may cause this, but in semantic search engine, not all the returns are related to this question, but if they are related, they are kind of what kinds of disease or kind of more professional reason.
So that's our chance for mean average precision and the indices. So even we have in some case the keyword is better than the match search, but overall in each rank semantics all better than keyword. So from our batch evaluation the results show semantic win. And like that medical student mentioned, the documents written from the medical are more professional and from the keyword mode are more general. And we already talked about the reasons why it's inconsistent. And
we found that those results are what we want. But once we compare the first round and second round and compare the agreements, it's all very different. This couple of results, most of them are
under 0.35 and compared to a table, which four or two slides in the week. So the reason is we think assessors are well trained and most of them are not medical students and they'll not work hard because it's a lot of work. So at the end they just put A, B, C, F, whatever. And some of them are not native speakers and it's very professional medical issue, not interesting. So that makes them not correct.
So in the user evaluation, we changed almost all the user names are non-Chinese. Okay, still come to user evaluation. We use both the observation and contemplative, and we have the question set, which there are 4 questions. We try to get more daily life related topics which they may be left bored during the testing. And we use the Latin square, which we mentioned last time, to make the order more equal for each topic and each user. Increase the order. And we use the software to record the results. And first of all, what we did is a pilot study. This is not a perfect plan at all, we found that, but it is good because this is a pilot study. The problem we found, the first one, is the networking is not that good. It takes a very long time to respond. The reason is the server menu itself is in Japan. So
So to solve this problem, we make a plan B, which is we bring another laptop for the user to use 401. So that once she's waiting or he's waiting for the results, he can use another laptop to continue searching. And the training is not enough because we do the pilot study with the non-information retrieval class students, and she's not familiar with those. So we took a very long time to train her, and finally we found it is worthy more benefits if we have the student in this class. And also we found the recording software, which is take a lot of memory and to crash the system. So we here is the result. We count two things. First is the time. How long does each user to search for each topic in each system, and also the count of queries, how many queries do they use. And we found that it seems like by average systematic system, people use for 4 minutes and 3 seconds, and in GPU assumption, people use 4 minutes and 30 seconds. But for our understanding, that doesn't make a huge difference because the long response time for the server. The query time. For each topic, people use 3.8 queries in semantics to find the answers they need for each topic, and in keyword they use 5. But do they mean semantic really wins? Once we do the informal interview with the users, we want to see how users satisfied with the system, and those are how the users return to us. And they found that it is very hard to use the verb, object, and subject. And also, they just feel like to use the keywords. And also, one of the users found a very good part of the system, which need to be improved. That is, if there are two words and two objects, semantics can do nothing. Those are the possible reasons for them. People may be more familiar with keywords. And also the questions that we are based on the interest needs, but also the professional needs. And the user group, it is kind of a very small, only 4 users, and their main students are medical. In this study, we use both batch evaluation and user evaluation. And each of them shows one of semantic wins or keyword wins. But what does those two results show? In this specific case, we found that this semantic is great for medical professionals. Yes, he or she should have some foundation of the information retrieval. And the keyword has better interface and less learning curve. It's better for getting general information. And also the semantic medley needs to build better interface. Here we come to the questions we have on the first. Do we think ontology really helps searching? The answer is yes. But a further study is still needed. It is not a quite reliable user study that everyone can believe in, because we not have a large enough user group. And also a better design could have more medical professionals and longer training time. And what we learned from this project, we learned to set up the whole evaluation process based on our focus. And at first we thought it won't be too hard, but after we really designed our topics and the way, it's really hard because there are too many factors we need to think about. And
And also we learn new methods by ourselves. We look through the journals and papers to figure out how can we implement these new methods to our own project.
Questions?
The tanker going left.
Did you build them from that? I'm sure you have a kind of like an algorithm. Did you build up the phrase from scratch, like yourself?
No. This method is a new method already used in some papers.
Actually, the lawyer there, I think, in simple terms, could you explain gain?
Yes, gain means because the idea of this is the more relevant documents you have, more value, not just like binary results, 0 or 1, should have like A, in our case, A is highly relevant, so you have three points. So you can see
okay. So the importance of the document goes up hard to 2. Yeah. It's going up. The importance is a new document is
more relevant.
It's
higher.
Yeah, it's higher than 2, so it's going up for 1.
Third question. Okay, very good, thank you. Okay, Mike, can you still hear us? Okay, let's see, I'll put this here where you can ask questions. And I'll try to sit near it. This part of the class is not being recorded just because we managed to screw up the entire digital configuration of the back to try to get it there. And getting it back would take more time. Not a problem. But what I wanted to do was talk about what's coming up that we may. So someone once told me that no matter when you set the deadline, people will send in their papers within 15 minutes of the deadline. And I didn't think if I said before I got up in the morning that would happen, but indeed, one of them came in at 6:15, taking a slight risk with regard to what time I got up that night. Now, the final reports are due on Friday. The reason why they're due on Friday is so that you will not spend the weekend working on the final reports. You can spend the weekend thinking about the exams. And so I don't care how late you want to stay up on Friday night. They're due before I get up in the morning on Saturday. I will warn you, I got up early last night. First thing I did was check my email. Oh my God, look at all that. So anytime you like on Friday. They don't have to have anything more in them than you had in your talks. In general, I thought the talks were excellent. In fact, I thought they ran a little on the long side, as you'll notice looking at your watch. The reports could have, they could address things that you didn't have time for, or things you checked out, but you don't have to write reports that are 3 times what you've done so far. The preparing for the exam, I realize, can be somewhat stressful simply because we didn't have a midterm. We could have had a midterm. The class had a midterm before, but it didn't seem like a good use of time. But as a stress reduction technique, I will offer you 2 options. One is you can take a 3-hour block of time this weekend after the Friday deadline, and I will come in then.
end. If you want to come in, then that's fine. You pick the 3-hour block of time, and we can chat about anything you want. It's essentially weekend office hours. So if you've been studying something and just discovered you don't know it, you know, that's a good time to come discuss. And I'm also happy to talk on the phone or come in by appointment. But I'll pick, you know, you pick the 3-hour block of time, and I'll be happy. The second thing is, I'll make you a deal that if you would like to have a practice question graded, I'll specify for you a practice question, and I will give you same-day grades on the practice question. Now, you won't get, you know, enormously detailed comments because I'm doing this for everybody in the class, but if you want to write a practice question and see how I would grade it, then I'm more than happy to do that for you. And you can make an individual decision on that. I'll do that up until Sunday night. Right, so I mean, writing a practice question Monday afternoon isn't going to do you much good. But I'll turn around and answer to your. Oh, before you adjourn, please let me thank you very much for the I've put it done about you.
Good luck, everybody.
The man is not taking the exam. So I'll do this anytime up until Sunday night, and what I mean by Sunday night, again, is before I get up on Monday night. So do you want to take me up on that?
Yeah.
Pose the question.
No, I will pose the question now, and I mean, I've just picked a question that I think is representative of the sort of question that I might ask. Then the third thing that I'll do is I will stay now for anybody who wants to stay, and we will answer one of the questions in one of the practice exams together as a group. Just to go through the, you know, what's the thought process, what constitutes the answer, if you like. If nobody stays, I'll take the hint that people would rather think about this over the weekend. So the practice question is on the 1999 exam, and it's question number 2. Right? And that question says, on evaluation, recall and precision are often criticized as not accurately reflecting the way in which people actually use information retrieval systems. Identify the assumptions that underlie the calculation of recall and precision. Give at least one example of each assumption. Shows a case in which the assumption is true. Explain why recall and precision are so widely used despite the apparent problems you've identified. So this is the kind of a question you saw on the homework when you got to the end and it said, now, think about this, right? And so if you want to practice that, answering that question should take you 45 minutes.
Which question was that
again? So that's the 1999 exam. It's from fall of 99. Question number 2. And I'll send this out by email so that you'll have it when you start thinking about that. Okay? So, hey, just write it up in email, ship it to me, and I'll ship you an answer. And if you don't get an answer from me within 24 hours, then, you know, something went wrong. And okay? Okay. Now, on the offer of the 3-hour weekend office hours, do you want that? Anybody going to take me up on that? No? 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 Nobody wants that. Nobody wants it. I'm happy to do it.
As we're studying during the week, if we come up with questions, can we schedule a time?
You can certainly schedule a time individually. This is just a matter of, you know, everybody can sort of lock in their calendar. Nobody wants it? Gone. Okay. If you change your mind, I mean, anybody wish to go through the answer to a question? Obviously, not your practice. All in favor? Yes. Good. So we're going to do that, and you don't feel obligated to stay. And you can get the insights from someone else on what we talk about if you don't want to stay, or if your schedule will not allow it. You realize there are hundreds of catch and things like that. Okay, so the question I'd like to try, which I have picked not because it's the world's best question, but because it's actually one of the harder questions, is... and after we're done with this, I'm happy to stick around and answer questions off the questions or off the study guide as well. So it says, there are two of them, so let me pick one quickly here. No, this is off the 2001 test. So in both cases, I'm picking tests that I wrote. If you pick Jimmy Lin's test, it, you know, it's a little bit different. Okay, explain how an analog of inverse document frequency could be used to improve a photographic image retrieval system that is based solely on color histograms. Okay, so how would you use the color histogram idea, but put into it something like IDM? Right? Do you understand the question? Okay, so the question, word for word, is explain how an analog, something similar to, of inverse document frequency, IDF, could be used to improve a photographic image retrieval system that is based solely on color histograms. So there are a couple of things that would be helpful in thinking about this. One would be, it'd be really nice to know what IDF was. And you could have that knowledge on two levels. You could have that knowledge, what it's saying the book IDF is, or you could have this sort of visceral understanding that you got when you did the homework, and you found out what happened when we changed the number of documents from what we used in class, and the IDF had a different effect on the retrieval, right? So that's the kind of an understanding I'm trying to appeal to here, is really knowing what it means to use IDF.
So the person
answers
then can start off by the person that
That would be good if you wrote the question in a way that made it clear to me that you understood what IDF was. It wouldn't be necessary that you did that, but surely to get in the right state of mind, you'd want to get that state. The other thing you want to do, and I often find it useful to underline words in the questions, is that this is a photographic image retrieval system, and that's different from the document image retrieval systems that Dave Dorman was talking about. So one kind of mistake that students make is to try to answer the wrong question. Now, frankly, I think that students do this for the reason that I did it when I was a student. They don't know the answer to the right question, but they do know the answer to the wrong question, and so they just merrily answer the wrong question. I know which question is right, and I will grade what the question was, not whether the answer is a good answer to some question. So this photographic business is important because maybe photographs have different characteristics in color histograms than other kinds of things you might use color histograms for. Right? So that's the sort of a thought process to get you started. So what do you think the answer is? I mean, how would you go about answering the question now that I've given you that set? Take me a level deeper.
A color histogram is essentially a graph of the different levels of each color on the spectrum that are present in photograph, correct?
So that's the picture that I showed of a color histogram was a histogram, literally, where each position was a color.
Right.
Right? But that's not really what a color histogram is. This is one of the places that, so this is a good place to start your thinking. What is a color histogram really?
Well, where's my foot? Is it sort of a map of the color?
Well, it's
a
vector. A color histogram is a vector, right? For each element, which would have been a term in a document, for each color, we have a value. Value. What does look like a vector, right?
I never really answered color histograms. I mean,
this is a good time to get them straight.
Yeah. Is it the number of pixels that have that color value, or is it like rows and columns of the image and a value for each one?
Excellent. So it's the number of pixels that have that color.
Okay, that makes sense. It is a vector.
It has a few characteristics that a normal vector doesn't have. So, for example, in a normal vector, words that are adjacent don't normally have the same meaning. They're similar meanings. Whereas in a color histogram, simply because of the way the colors are sorted, colors that are adjacent are more similar than colors a long way away, perhaps. So you could in fact do more things, but if you just thought of it as a vector,
conceptually, I'm thinking of it as the inverse document frequency would be useful because the images with the rarer colors or the more special kinds of
But I don't think that talks to IDF. So, in fact, there's a lot you could say about color histograms and why they work and how they work, but the question's about IDF. So the question can be answered with a very tightly worded answer, if you wish to. You can certainly ramble, because you know you have to design the answers you're going. There's no problem with me if you ramble or use bulleted lists or change your mind in the middle. All those things are fine, but we want to be focused on IDF, so that we have to build from the vector to IDF. How do we use a vector to find IDF? You see how the sort of logical flow of the question goes? This question, unlike the one I gave you for practice, does not take you through the process of answering the question. Right? So the question I gave you for practice is easier than this question. Here, you can get stuck if you don't construct your own way of working to the answer.
I'm not a big fan of the color histogram because I don't see how the IDF would work. If you had, let's say you had a black and white picture and you had the negative right next to it, and you as a person can see they're the same picture, but the color histogram could not look anything like it would be the opposite.
Sure. So I can understand not being a big fan of color histograms, yeah. But given that we're using color histograms because the client likes them, imagine.
IDF wouldn't tell you. I mean,
So IDF wouldn't tell you that. Okay. So there are two ways you can take the question here. What does IDF even mean here? We haven't answered that question yet. And the other question is, how would it result in an improvement? Which is to say, under what conditions would it result in an improvement? Now you could come back and say, here's a condition where it wouldn't result in an improvement. I said, okay, fine, but that's probably not as good an answer as the person sitting next to you who said under this condition it would result in an improvement. Right? Because the question is, how could it be used to improve? So surely it won't improve all the time. We have this house with everything we've tried, right? Sometimes it gets better, sometimes it gets worse. What about it would make it better?
Could you repeat the question? What are we trying to improve?
The specific question, which you would have in front of you,
yes.
Answering it. Explain how an analog to IDF could be used to improve a photographic image retrieval system that is based solely on color histograms. So you can't answer this question unless you can tell me what an analog to IDF is here. And we've only established that it's a vector. We're going to run about another 5 minutes if that's okay.
But I'll be recording.
If you're recording me, that's great. We don't need the webcast. Yes. Okay?
Yeah.
So I want to understand this. I want to know, what does it mean? So can you develop it for me?
Well, the simple one would be the most unusual colors in the collection. Would be the high IDF.
And how would you identify the most unusual colors in the collection?
You would take the color histogram of thousands of documents, thousands of pictures.
Yes.
And each in your vector, the dimensions are equivalent to the color value,
yes.
Which is like a hex value for the color, something like that. And you just have to see which one. Actually, that's more like you get the document frequency of each color value.
Okay, good. So you would get the document frequency of each color value. Now, I would think the easiest way to see that yourself, you were sort of jumping several letters and doing this in your mind, would be to draw the matrix. Here's the vector, just like you saw before, right? Here's the vector. I mean, just bring out the homework for crying out loud, right? Here's the vector. Here's a set of vectors. Here we count the number of pictures in which we see this color. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
So this would get you to what does it mean? You define some analog. You could have the sum of the term frequencies, that'd be another analog, not the one I had in mind, but I wouldn't grade it down. The pixel count. Rather than counting 1 or 0. You could do the logarithm, which is what we did for the term, or not. The square root, you know. But I would think you'd probably come up with the logarithm of the count of the number of pictures in which it occurred. And now you're ready to answer the remainder of the question. So the first question is, what would be such an analog, right? Explain how an analog could improve. Now that you have an analog in mind, Now I need an argument that says it would improve something. So a way of answering this would be to find me an example not of where it didn't help, but of where it did. So what could it improve?
If you had a picture, you could say, find more like this. And you could take the TF-IDF terms from that picture and find other pictures that have lots of instances of the same IDF colors.
Okay, and so you're saying it might improve that. You have some basis for thinking why that improvement might happen, maybe arguing
by analogy. On lots of blue.
There you go, right? So that's the simplest answer, is to say, well, gosh, we probably have lots of pictures that have lots of blue in them and lots of pictures that have lots of white in them and not nearly as many pictures that have lots of, what was today's favorite color, fuchsia?
Fuchsia.
Yeah, that have lots of fuchsia in them, right? So when I see some fuchsia, it's more specific. And so if I'm doing a more like this search, then I can ask the question, do I get a better, let's say, mean average precision on a more like this search? Or do I get a better, let's say, expected search length to the document found again with lots of other documents? That second one's probably not a good question. You'll find it in position one all the time. So that's not a good question. So step one was, what the heck are we talking about with this IDF-like thing? Step two, what might it improve? And then a step beyond beyond saying what might happen that would make this an excellent answer to the question, how would you know? Right? Which wasn't asked, but you were only speculating. You didn't have nobody can construct an example. Where it's short enough. So you could say, well, it might help in this way. So we could tell them that way. It did. So I don't think I'd mark people down for not saying how would they know, but I think I'd be impressed if they did. And you see how this sort of fits what's going on in class, right? What's the method? What are we trying to accomplish? How would we know if it worked? So there's kind of there's an overlay for answering questions. Make sense? Now, I'll tell you a really nasty thing that happened to me. I took a course in college teaching. And at the final class, we went through a sample final exam. And in that sample final exam, we all were kicking around ideas and creating solutions. And in the end, he said, so if I gave you this exam, you'd think it was fair. And I was like, yes, that's the exam. That's the answer. So maybe you get a reward for staying late. Okay. Or maybe it'll be very simple.
So just to back up on that, is it going
to
be a
paper
or a
typing? Oh, gosh. I haven't thought of that. I don't really care. I'll take it either way.
How long are you expecting?
What's that?
How long should be done, sir?
Oh, this is a good question. The entire exam is limited by the university to 2 hours. So if there are three questions, then you only have about a half an hour of questions to a long meeting, right? If there are two questions, you'd have an hour of questions.
Are you looking for like a one-page answer or?
Anything's okay. And if people are interested next week after the exam in going out for a social event, it has been a tradition of mine, which I learned in my first Swiss class when I was a student, for us all to go out and enjoy having survived and learned and passed the exam and all those things. So after the exam, we can go down to Bentley's, which last time we did this was just a total nightmare because we showed up in the middle of some football game practice or something. But we'll find a place that doesn't have 2,000 screaming kids and fairly or something like that, if people want to.
Thank you.
very interesting. I was particularly intrigued by one of your comments, which is that people want bread, not messages. I know this from a family of mine,